Pleasant to be with you again. To say a little bit about Albania. And if John has taken 5 minutes, as he alleges, then I'll just have to speak faster. It's amazing how much you can catch up if you speak faster. I would like, though, first to read just a few verses of Scripture. Acts chapter 20. Acts chapter 20. Reading verse 1. The story begins in Ephesus, where there's been a riot. And after the uproar was ceased, Paul called unto him the disciples and embraced them and departed for to go into Macedonia. And when he had gone over those parts, or gone through those parts, and had given them much exhortation, he came into Greece. You notice he went into Macedonia, verse 1, and then he went through, it says, those parts. He went almost certainly beyond Macedonia, because it seems likely that in the next couple of verses, we have an account of what Paul was doing around the time that he was writing the epistle to the Romans. And that's where we're going to turn for our next reading. Romans chapter 15. Romans chapter 15, for the only mention of Albania in the Bible. Romans 15 and verse 18. For I will not dare to speak of any of those things which Christ hath not wrought by me, to make the Gentiles obedient by word and deed, through mighty signs and wonders by the power of the Spirit of God, so that from Jerusalem and round about, even unto Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. Yea, so have I strived to preach the gospel, not where Christ was named, lest I should build upon another man's foundation, but as it is written, to whom he was not spoken of, they shall see, and they that have not heard shall understand. I've read those verses because they have the reference to Illyricum. Paul went from Ephesus in Asia Minor, across into Macedonia, and those parts. And then he tells us in Romans 15 that he actually went as far as to Illyricum. So he went across Macedonia, northern, what would now be northern Greece and Macedonia, there's a new state of Macedonia. And then when he got a certain distance west, he would have gone north again to get to Illyricum. So that in going into western Macedonia, he would have gone into what is now Albania, and heading north into Illyricum, he would have reached the northernmost tip of Albania as it is today. That's part of a progress that we find in the Acts of the Apostles. John has spoken of the importance of witness, the importance of testimony, the importance of spreading, by all means, the message of Christ. You remember Acts chapter 1, the Lord Jesus said, you'll be my witnesses. Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the uttermost part of the earth. That's the expanding program that you have in the Acts of the Apostles. So that, in a sense, the climax of the Acts is where Luke says, and so we came to Rome. Rome is the capital of the world. From there you could travel anywhere. In Acts chapter 8, you have an interesting transition period, because in Acts chapter 8 there was the record of the preaching in Samaria when large numbers of people were saved. And then in Acts chapter 8 God took the evangelist Philip out of Samaria, and he placed them down in the Judean desert to meet a man from Ethiopia. A man from almost the uttermost part of the earth, you would say. Now, one of the things you watch for in the Acts of the Apostles, if you want to read more about it, you read David Gooding's excellent book on the Acts. One of the things you look for in the Acts of the Apostles is the record of the journeys. And around this point in Acts, nearly everybody you meet is on a journey away from Jerusalem, because the message is going away from Jerusalem, and it's going to go to the uttermost part of the earth. In Acts chapter 8, the man who was saved was an African, but he was almost certainly a proselyte. He had been convinced of the genuineness of the religion of the Jews. We'll put it at that. In chapter 9, the man who was saved, arrested by God, was a Jew. Saul of Tarsus, a very orthodox Jew. But you see, part of the story of Acts is how this man was used in carrying the gospel away to the Gentiles. So you have a Gentile saved in chapter 8, and in chapter 9 you have a Jew saved who was going to preach to Gentiles, and in chapter 10 you have another kind of Gentile. The first one was an African, and the third one, chapter 10, was a European. And he was a Gentile, not a proselyte, I take it. Paul preached, he said, in Macedonia and those parts. Chapter 20, he preached in Macedonia and those parts, and then went on into Greece. Romans 15, he says, he preached as far as to Illyricum. But Paul wasn't finished there, because Paul had his sights set on Rome. He had an ambition to preach at Rome also. And God gave him his ambition, granted him his desire that he should preach at Rome. Paul almost certainly wouldn't have chosen the method of getting there that he had, as a prisoner. But whether he arrived as a prisoner, or whether he arrived in triumph on horseback, he was there. And Paul was prepared to go on witnessing, whether he arrived as a prisoner or on horseback. He was smitten off horseback more or less in chapter 8. But he was a witness, and he was going on and out with the gospel. He had an ambition to go to Spain, he tells us. And I'm one of those who believe that he probably went to Spain in between two different imprisonments. I wouldn't swear by that, but this man whom God chose to take the gospel kept on being convinced of the importance that those who had not heard should hear the message. That's why he went away up to Illyricum. And to me, it was a moving thought that when the door into Albania was opened, 1991, after being closed for over a generation, the people of Albania were amongst those. A striking thing that after all those generations and hundreds of years, almost 2,000 years, the same process was being repeated as was carried on when the apostle went to Illyricum preaching Christ where he had not been named. About Albania, just a very, very brief sketch of the background. You'll have gathered by now that Albania is in the Mediterranean. If you go north from Greece, northwest from Greece, and head towards what used to be called Yugoslavia, and there are bits of it called all sorts of things now, you will pass, if you keep to the coast, through a small country the size of Vancouver Island. Startling thought, that. Very small country, and that country is Albania. Only 3.3 million people, a very mountainous country, barren rocky mountains, very few trees in the country because it's been burnt. But a country that has, I think, suffered more than almost any country in Europe, probably has suffered more than any in Europe, with various troubles. It was in Muslim hands. The Ottoman Turks ruled it for 500 years, until 1912. Then there was some remission of their sufferings, and at the end of World War II, a communist government took over, and the sufferings began again. For the communist government was led by a tyrannical man called Enver Hoxha, who ruled the people by secret police. For the communist government was led by a tyrannical man called Enver Hoxha, who ruled the people by secret police and by informers, a most complicated system of informing and of secret police surveillance, the most effective in Europe. Their communism was the most hardline in Europe. In fact, it was so hardline that they would have nothing to do with the Russians after a short while of contact with them, because the Russians, they said, were far too liberal. So they made friends with the Chinese. And until 1991, when communism collapsed along with what economy they had, China and Albania were friends when nobody else liked either of them, more or less. 1991 was the beginning of the collapse of that government. Since then, there has been a period of relative openness. Before 1991, the official government policy since the 1960s was that all religion was strictly banned in the country. It was an offense to practice any religion, to mention God, to tell anybody anything that suggested that there was a God or that there was any validity in anything religious. Atheism was the official doctrine of the country, and people were not allowed to believe in any religion. Even Islam, which was the religion that traditionally most people would have said was theirs. All of it put in. But in 1991, as I say, that collapsed. During that period, I always think that the most dramatic way to represent the attitude of the government is to speak of the banner that they put above the entrance to the airport at Tirana. The banner said, "In Albania, there is no God." Just in case the visitors didn't know, in Albania, there is no God. But as I love to remind people, the man who got the banner put up is dead. His memory is not revered. His palace is a museum. His statue was pulled down by his own people. Massive statue in the main square in Tirana. And the message of the gospel is freely preached in Albania. Before 1991, when the country was tightly shut up against the gospel, God moved certain people's hearts to think about Albania. There was an Italian sister who is now a missionary in Albania who decided that she ought to learn the Albanian language so that she could take the gospel to Albanian people, even though she had no prospect, humanly speaking, of getting into the country. But she could get into Yugoslavia, and she got into Yugoslavia to work there and to learn Albanian. There is, you see, a province in the south of what was Yugoslavia, what I think is still called Yugoslavia, the Serbian part. And in that province, everybody virtually is Albanian. The people all speak Albanian, even though they're not in Albania. So this sister went there and learnt Albanian, so that when the door opened, she was able to go in and to speak the language to the people. There was a brother from Australia who learnt Albanian. I think he came to Canada to learn Albanian, which seems an odd thing to do, still. So that he would be able to go in, and he preached there for some time before circumstances forced him to go back to Australia. There was a Mexican brother who, before the door was open, went in as a student. He's a single man, still is. He went in as a student to take a course at the university in Tirana in Albanian literature. He then stayed on when the country opened to the gospel, and he's still there preaching and has seen work established in two or three places. I think it might be wise, in case you are wondering how on earth I come to be talking about this place, for me to mention how we come to be involved in it. Albania is the poorest country in Europe, materially speaking. It was a very poor country in 1991 when it began to open. A brother in Belfast was a friend of mine, was in the assembly where I was, Bloomfield Assembly in Belfast. I remember praying in the prayer meeting before there was any talk of Albania opening. And he used to pray that God would open the door into Albania so that the gospel could be preached there. And I would have to confess that my first reaction on hearing this, I think some people didn't hear him say it because probably they didn't know what Albania was, whether it was a country or a disease or what it was. But at any rate, he prayed for Albania, and my first reaction was, well, if you were choosing where you would pray for, you couldn't choose a harder one than Albania. But he wasn't choosing where he would pray for. When he was listening in to stations on shortwave radio, one night he heard a perfectly clear broadcast in excellent English. And as he listened, he wondered what it was. And as he went on listening, he heard this most virulent form of anti-Christian, anti-Western propaganda. Atheistical communism of the most doctrinaire kind. And as he listened on, it was Radio Tirana, the official propaganda radio from Tirana, one of the most powerful broadcasting stations in Europe. Excellent reception throughout Western Europe. And that was what started Cecil Gaw praying for Albania. You see, when the forces of darkness strengthen their forces against God, they invariably end up by shooting themselves through the foot. When the forces of darkness thought that they had won a victory over God by putting Christ on the cross, they brought about what God had already determined should be done, as the Christians said in Acts chapter 4. When the forces of darkness set up a very powerful broadcasting instrument in Tirana, they provided the equipment on which the gospel is now preached once a week, or maybe more than that. When the forces of darkness built a large palace of culture in Tirana so that atheism could be taught there and atheistic culture could be promoted there, they didn't know that when Albania was open to the gospel and Italian missionaries came in preaching the gospel, the building that they would get to preach it, because it was the only building big enough to hold the crowds that would want to hear it, was the Palace of Culture. And when the country opened in 1991 and the message was brought, it was the Palace of Culture that was used as the meeting place for the preaching of the gospel. I should explain how it was the missionaries came to be there. I haven't yet explained how I come into it, have I? I need to do that. Cecil Gaw decided when he saw the need in Albania that we should do something about it. Two things we felt we ought to do particularly. No Bibles had been permitted in Albania for a generation and more. And Cecil said, we ought to be able, if there are Albanian Bibles or Albanian New Testaments, we ought to be able to provide the money to make sure that the people who are there to preach the gospel will have as many copies of the scriptures as they want to distribute or are able to distribute. And so we set about trying to bring that to pass. And we have now a situation where we have an agreement with the missionaries. If they want to get Bibles, they go to a depot in Tirana that sells them, and the bill comes to us. We have been able to meet all the bills without any difficulty so far. The second thing is that you cannot give a Bible to a man who has no shirt on his back and no food in his stomach and say, here is a Bible, be warmed and fed. It is not possible to do that. It's certainly not possible for a Christian to do it. So, we felt that it was necessary that we should do what we could to alleviate the suffering of the people through need of the basic necessities of life. So we have been sending large quantities of clothing and of bedding and of other things that from time to time prove to be necessary or relevant. We've been sending that over these last few years. At the peak of our contribution, we were sending a 40-foot truck full of stuff approximately once every 4 months. That was possible only through tremendous generosity by many of the Lord's people. How did the gospel then come to be preached there? 1991, conditions in Albania were so bad, so many people were so poor and in such distress that they fled to Italy. Over 30,000, I believe, fled over a period of some months, arrived in Italy, and the Italians did the only thing they could do. They enclosed the people in a sort of concentration camp where they gave them the bare necessities, the best they could manage under the pressures, and then tried to organize themselves to get them sent back to Albania. They couldn't absorb them. They had to go back. But in the providence of God, the people were held in an area very close to where there were quite a number, large number of believers in assembly fellowship. And these believers had never been particularly active in missionary work before and had not had the urge nor the call to go to Albania. And so God made sure that they wouldn't miss their cue by sending the Albanians to them. Now, it's one thing to get on the boat and go to another country, but it's quite a different thing when just down the road there are thousands of Albanians in your own backyard. So the Italian assemblies rose nobly to that challenge. They went and they provided little comforts, personal counseling and help. Many, many Albanians speak good Italian. Albanians are very good linguists. And secondly, of course, the Italian Christians gave them the gospel. Quite a number of them were saved. Then there came the point where the Italian government said, right, we're organized now, back you go to Albania. And the new Christians said to their Italian brethren, now, it's wonderful that God has sent us here to hear the gospel, and it's wonderful that you responded in giving us the gospel, but you can't leave us now. We're going back home and our people don't know the gospel, and we don't know enough to preach it to them. We know so little, and you know so much. You must come. So the pressing invitation was to come to Albania. A number of Italians responded to that, and also a missionary from New Zealand, a man called Stan Davey. They responded to this call and went to Tirana and preached, as I have said, in the Palace of Culture. The response of the Albanian people was overwhelming. Literature was a big thing. Imagine yourself in a country where, for as long as you can remember, as long maybe as your parents can remember, nobody, but nobody has had anything printed about Christianity, about Christ, about God, in his or her hands. And then along come people who say, you can have a free book about God. And this was a most wonderful thing. And the people would come urgently and eagerly to take literature. In many parts of Albania, people are still very enthusiastic to receive New Testaments, portions of Scripture. Our main gospel booklet is one which is well known all over the world, Ultimate Questions. The Albanians say that their people find it relevant, that it asks, that it seeks to answer questions which they want to ask, and even if they don't immediately respond to it, they say this booklet is worth reading because it makes sense. Literature were as well received as that, we would be very happy people. We provide New Testament by the tens of thousands, Bibles by the thousands, Ultimate Questions by the tens of thousands. We order about 20,000 at a time. If you're in the habit of buying it, you will know that if you buy it in the shop, it's expensive, but we buy it from the publisher in bulk, so we get it at a fraction of the final retail price. The message of the gospel then was brought in by a variety of people. In Albania at the moment, there are, if my calculations are correct, 1, 2, 3 Italian couples and a single Italian sister. There are 2 American couples. There is a Mexican brother, single brother. There is a Dutch sister who does a very good work providing a home and counseling and comfort to unmarried mothers and their babies. The alternative where she lives would be that nobody would do anything for these girls because their families will generally not want to know. But this Dutch sister has been there. Now, difficulties have arisen in recent times. Last winter, a crisis arrived because for some time unscrupulous men had been selling to people shares in chancy business ventures. What is called, I believe, pyramid selling of shares. When I tell you that the people were attracted by the assurance that they could get 8% interest per month, would you put your money into that? 8% per month. Pretty good, isn't it? Then you see, there's no possibility of 8% a month being sustained by any financial venture. It was crooked from the start. The only people who made a profit were the people who ran it. And when they had made their profit, they got out because the whole thing collapsed. There were several of these running at the same time. The whole thing collapsed early this year. Many people said that the President and the Prime Minister and various other members of the government were involved in it. On the winning end, of course, not the losing end. And so the people in many parts of the country simply threw caution to the winds and threw the country into turmoil. There were riots, disorder of all kinds. A few factories had been built since the country began to try to pick itself up in 1991-92. People burnt the factories they worked in. Sheer frustration and anger and unthinking desire to hurt everybody that was possible to hurt. They hurt themselves, but still, the factories were burnt. The country dissolved into disorder. The Albania was a major producer of arms and ammunition for Eastern Europe. And there were many government arsenals ill-guarded by a few troops. Large bodies of armed men converged on these arsenals and gave the soldiers guarding them the choice of dying as heroes or opening the gates and handing over the arms. And the soldiers chose to open the gates. It was a very, apparently a very gentlemanly thing that they sort of opened the gates and said, "Gentlemen, please help yourselves." So that today Albania is the best armed civilian population in the world. The favorite weapon is the Kalashnikov. I wouldn't know a Kalashnikov if I met one, but I've heard its reputation. It is estimated that there are about 1,000 of these military weapons in the hands of the civilian population. Sorry, 1 million of these in the hands of the civilian population of 3.3 million. Which means that every home can have one. And most homes have had one. These are in the hands of people who don't know how to handle them. Children are using powerful weapons. And it is a tragic thing that many people have lost their lives because people who didn't know how to control powerful weapons had them in their hands and didn't know what to do with them. The government fell. The president resigned. He sacked his prime minister, but that wasn't enough, so then he went. The government fell. There were elections. A new government was elected, which is largely left-wing. The previous one was largely right-wing. The previous one was largely controlled by people from the north of the country, which was a change because the communist government was largely based in the south of the country. There's a north-south divide, not unlike Ireland, you might say. The government has been trying to bring things under control, and many parts are rather more settled than they were, but the country is still far from being stable. Law and order has not been fully restored. The economy is in tatters. The international community is slow to give aid until law and order is restored, so we're in a catch-22 situation as far as foreign aid is concerned. The gospel has made great progress in Albania. I'm watching the clock, and I think we should finish on a positive note. The gospel has made rapid strides in Albania. In 15 different centers, the Christians meet together to break bread as we do. Some of the companies are very small. Some of them depend for their survival on help from larger companies. The largest assembly would be in Tirana, the capital. Shortly before things blew up, just about the end of last year, they opened their new hall officially. The new hall holds approximately 300. And they get it more or less filled for the gospel meeting. It's not bad. Most of those people would be unsaved. It is not uncommon for several people to be saved at the ordinary Sunday night gospel meeting, Sunday afternoon gospel meeting. Baptisms are frequent because the number of people responding to the gospel is quite steady and firm. The response to the gospel, the interest in the gospel, has increased since the troubles that began last January, February. At a time when most of the missionaries were out of the country because some of them were not given any choice by their governments, they were simply told, "You go out, you go." The Italians were sent home without any choice in the matter. Some missionaries stayed, including our Dutch sister, on her own, down in Gierkaster, a very dangerous place. But at a time when missionaries were few and far between, if there wasn't too much gunfire, the believers carried on their meetings. They met together to break bread, they met together to pray, and many unsaved people came to their prayer meetings. And they met together to preach the gospel. And God continued to save people, and indeed perhaps saved more people at that time than he had been doing in the previous months and maybe years. The assemblies are dotted across the countryside from the far north, a place called Schoder, large town in the north, quite a strong little assembly there. It's not as big as Tirana, but it is a strong little assembly. And from Schoder, work has been established, two other small assemblies, and regular gospel work on a weekly basis in that area in about three or four other centres. I think I'll take the time to give you the summary that one of the Italian brethren gave me of how they would see the gospel expanding in the country. He said, first of all, we seek contact with people in gospel outreach, and usually with literature. If it is appropriate, of course, to give aid to people, then aid would be given. If people express an interest, having heard the gospel, and if they're willing to have a regular gospel meeting where they live, then a regular gospel meeting will be arranged, usually in a home. The experience of the brethren has been that people do respond. This is all new. There's no taking things for granted here because the gospel is new. And people do respond, and there are conversions. They teach the new converts that they should be baptized. They teach them to gather to the name of the Lord Jesus. They teach them to witness to others. When an assembly is formed, the assembly are taught that they have a responsibility to replicate this process, to seek contacts, to seek places for regular gospel meetings, to seek to instruct new converts, to seek to teach them, to seek to teach them to witness. This is what is called the multiplier effect. The missionaries are not expecting that they will see people saved on an additive basis. The missionary sees one saved, two saved, three saved. When there are 100 people there and they are witnessing, there are 100 people witnessing. Not just three missionaries or something like that. In Tirana itself, the capital, work has gone out and two other assemblies have been formed, and there are at the moment either three or four, I'm not sure which, centres where the gospel is regularly preached. And I'll mention one of those. A place called Babru, which is in Tirana, or on the edge of Tirana, is a place to which many people have come down from Trapoia in the far northeast of the country. An area that it is difficult to get to because it's difficult of access, and outsiders are reluctant to go, perhaps, to Trapoia, because it is an area that keeps itself to itself. But people from Trapoia have settled in Babru, and the Christians in Tirana have taken the gospel to Babru, and a number of people from Trapoia have been saved in Babru. Now we are praying. Many of the Albanians, and many of us who are interested in Albania, have been praying for Trapoia as being a difficult place and one that hasn't heard much of the gospel yet. But we are praying that through those converts of people from Trapoia in Babru, the gospel will be taken back. Because if a man from Trapoia goes back to Trapoia, he's not an outsider. He has relatives there. He has people there who know him. His accent, his voice, everything about him declares that he is a man of Trapoia. We are praying that that will happen, that Trapoia will be opened by people from Babru. And we would ask you to pray, and I'm going to finish, to pray for young men who are taking responsibility in Albanian assemblies. Some godly young men who are showing promise, showing signs of spiritual leadership. They have big responsibilities, and many of them are newly married or have one or two small children, so they have begun something that's new in the country, Christian households, with all the potential that is in that. We would ask you to pray for these young men. Some of them are being given special attention in terms of Bible teaching by the experienced missionaries and people like that. This is a key thing in the development of the work. Reaching out to the places that have not heard is a key element. But as the Italian missionary told me, who explained that process of multiplier effect, we want, he said, to establish something for God. That is of vital importance. Not just to run around excitedly doing as much as possible and not thinking about what we're here for. He said, we're here to see assemblies established for God, and that is what they have been concentrating on. We would ask you to pray for the missionaries. We would ask you to pray for Christian workers who travel on the roads, which are quite dangerous. There are many, many, obviously, many, many inexperienced drivers, because the number of vehicles has been increasing.